We're doing Pirkei Avot Rabbeinu Yonah. We're up to the first chapter, the 15th Mishnah. Shammai Omer. Shammai says, Asei Toratcha Keva. Make your Torah a constant. So there are different understandings what Shammai meant by that, as we'll see in a minute. Emor Me'at Vasei Harbe. Say little and do a lot. Ve'veim Mekabel Et Kol Ha'adam Besever Panim Yafot. And greet everyone with a warm countenance. Okay, says the Rabbeinu Yonah. Shammai Omer Asei Toratcha Keva. Shammai says, make your Torah constant. Kmo Shamru Ba'avot Rabbi Natan. As our sages say in the Braisa Avos Rabbi Nosan, Kol Ha'oseh Torato Ikar U'Melachto Tefila, Osin Oto Ikar Le'Olam Haba. So Rabbeinu Yonah takes it in the direction of what's the important part, what's the prime part of a person's day. So he quotes from there, Avos Rabbi Nosan, whoever makes the prime part of his day, the Torah, and the work is something that he does by the way, and he fits his work around this Torah, so then in the world to come, he also becomes a prime participant. So that's, the question here is this a question of attitude or time? Meaning we can understand this to mean dedicate 8 hours to Torah and 4 hours to work, as opposed to 8 hours to work and 4 hours to Torah. Or we can understand it that could be he's working 11 hours a day. But that 1 hour is the main part of his day. Meaning, we could understand it either way. And whoever lets the Torah be the secondary, the less important part of his day, and the focus, the prime important thing in his day is his work, then he will also become secondary, less important in the world to come. What the Medrash means to say is, technically a person didn't sin, he learned Torah. He learned Torah, just that wasn't his prime focus. So then even if he merits to get to the Garden of Eden, he will have lesser importance over there. And this is a very interesting point. You ask people, I remember our 6th grade Rebbe used to hammer this in. He'd say, people ask you, what are you going to be when you grow up? People say, I'm going to be a doctor, I'm going to be a lawyer, I'm going to be a fireman. No, you're going to be a God-fearing person, you're going to learn Torah, you're going to be a Talmud Chacham. You might have to support your family by being a doctor or a lawyer or something else. But the prime focus, what are you going to be? How does a person define himself? Let's take an extreme example. You see that set over there? Rav Kehati's commentary over there. Over there, the blue set. Rav Kehati's commentary on Mishnah.
Where is it?
Next shelf over.
The third shelf?
No, fourth. No. The fourth row going down, the third shelf. Or the top shelf. Go to the fourth bookcase, the top shelf. That whole set. That's
okay.
That's Rav Kehati.
Okay, now, that's what I'm supposed to look at.
Rav Kehati was a banker. Spent his whole day in the bank. And he'd come home and learn. And he was so focused on his learning when he'd come home that his wife would feed him like a little boy as he was learning. He wouldn't pick up his head from the Gemara. He was always learning. So no one even knows that Rav Kehati was a banker. You ask people, who is Rav Kehati? They'll tell you, oh, he's the one that wrote that great commentary on Mishnah. But people don't realize he was a banker. He spent his 8 hours, his banker's hours in the bank because his focus wasn't being a banker. A person can be a woodcutter, the simplest job, and yet his focus can be Torah, and that's Hillel. We know Hillel the Nasi was a woodcutter. That's how he sustained himself. A person can be a blacksmith. He could live in a house that's covered with charcoal and yet be known for eternity as the great Rabbi Yoshua in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya. He supported himself by being a blacksmith, and his walls were black. His house was black. You'd walk into his house, you'd see the soot all over. But that wasn't how he defined himself. He was Rabbi Yoshua. The fact that he supported himself by being a blacksmith was a side point. Now, you can be the great Shmuel, the doctor, but his focus was his Torah. He was also one of the greatest doctors that ever lived, but that wasn't his focus. Look at Maimonides, Nachmanides. How many people know that Nachmanides was a doctor?
My mind is
too. That too. Because that wasn't the focus. So here there are two ways of understanding. Either one can understand that it's a question of time. The main focus of time should be on Torah. But one doesn't have to understand the Rabbeinu Yonah and the Avos Rabbi Nelson that way. One can also understand that it's a question of focus. So the first tip Shammai tells us is the Torah should be the main focus of the day. Emor, when I was in yeshiva, so when I was in Merkaz Harav, there were three brothers that would meet every morning to learn. And I knew them as the three brothers who sat down to learn every morning. What I didn't know was that they are one of the wealthiest families in Israel. They own, I don't know how many businesses throughout the country. But every morning they get together and they learn together, these three brothers.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And when I was in Tiferes Yerushalayim in Rav Feinstein's yeshiva, so every evening we'd have two brothers that would come and learn, and they finished the whole Shas. Learning by us every night, they'd come and learn, sometimes for a half hour, sometimes for an hour, but they were learning, steady. And I didn't know that they were top real estate owners in New York, because that wasn't the important thing. The important thing is they're learning. And if you'd ask them, that was the important thing for them too. It's a question of perspective. A person can wheel and deal and spend few hours a day being an important businessman or whatever it is, but that's not the focus. Who is he? How does he define himself? Emor me'at v'aseh arbe. The next tip Shammai gives us is say little and do much. Kshetavtiach et chavercha la'asot ba'avuro shum davar. When you promise your friend, you'll do something on his behalf. Emor lo me'at. Promise little. V'aseh lo arbe. And do a lot. This is the way, this is the ethical and pious way to behave. Now, this is relevant even in mitzvos. Let's say you volunteer for an organization. You should try to minimize your obligations and then be able to live up to them and excel in them. To come in and say, I'll do this, that, and the other thing and take on a huge thing, is sometimes less beneficial. Take on smaller and be able to do it with more perfection and be able to give more than 100%. Here, we learn it from Avram, our patriarch, peace be upon him. Dichtiv, the verse says, when he offers the guests to take them in, so he's volunteering. What does he say? Let me bring you some bread. And then what does he actually bring him? He took butter, he took milk, he took a young calf. So, you see, even in volunteering, even when you're going to do someone a favor, it's nicer to say less and then do more. And that's such an exalted level. You see, our sages learned it from the Holy One, blessed be He, from God. Because when God promises Abraham that he will punish the Egyptians and judge them and take Abraham's grandchildren out of Egypt, what does God say? He uses two letters. He says, "Vegam et agoy asher yavodu," the nation that they will serve, "dan anochi," I will judge. So which word does God use to indicate he will punish them? He uses the word "dan." Two letters. "Vegalam v'sheva v'esrim milot," and yet when he redeemed them, he redeemed them with 27 words, as the verse says, "Ani salokim lavo lakach logoy mikerv goy v'chulu." V'al ze amar Rabbi Saadia Gaon, and about this, Rav Saadia Gaon, Rasag, said, "Im sheftiach et avoteinu b'shtei otiot, asa lehem kama nisim v'niflot." So Rav Saadia Gaon said, okay, now what can we derive from this? When God promised with two letters, so look at how many miracles he did in Egypt, taking us out of Egypt. "Ala geula atida lavo, שנכתבו כמה דפים וכמה קונדרסים וכמה ספרים מהבטחות." When we speak about the future redemption, where God wrote complete prophecies, yet pages after pages in the prophet Isaiah, Jeremiah, Treyosar, prophecies of the redemption that's yet to come, so then וכמה נחמות ביומיהו בנביאים, על אחת כמה וכמה המשמורסו, כי נפלאים יהיו מעשיו ממה שהבטיח נפשנו יודעת מאוד. So if that's what happened in the redemption from Egypt, we can rest assured that the future redemption is going to be so much more so. ויש לו לאדם לדעת לחשב בדבר ולתת אל ליבו, כי שכר גדול יהיה לו מפני הבטחות. So a person can think, okay, there's a lot of good waiting to come, because if God promised, then obviously he's going to outdo what he promised. Okay, we'll do the final thought. והווה מקבל את כל האדם בסבר פנים יפות. Greet every person with a warm countenance, שיראה להם פנים של שמחה. When you greet someone, show them happiness. Put a smile on your face. כדי שתהיה רוח הבריות נוחה הימנו. Because a person should attempt to have people be comfortable with him. That's one of our goals in life, that people should feel comfortable with the person. פירוש, so that's the first explanation. פירוש אחר, second explanation, והווה מקבל, שיתרחק ממידת הכעס שהיא מידה רעה מאוד. What the Mishnah was telling us is that a person should distance himself from anger, because anger is a terrible trait. וינהג עצמו במידת הרצון על דרך שיהיו מרוצים ממנו בני אדם. And a person should behave in a complacent, in a calm, friendly, agreeable manner, so that people will feel comfortable with him. וזו מידה נאה ומקובלת. And that's a fitting trait. ועל זה אמרו חז"ל בדרך מוסר, תרצה שתחפוץ, חפוץ מה שלא תחפוץ. Our sages said, you should want to desire, and desire what you don't desire. Meaning, a guy comes knocking at your door. You don't feel like talking to him. You answer the phone. So sometimes people answer the phone, yeah. And they give you the feeling they don't really want to talk to you now. Chazal said, a person should learn to greet people besever panim yafot, to greet people warmly, even when he doesn't feel like it. And that's the idea here, that ayvim kabel kol adam besever panim yafot. The Mishnah says, greet everyone with a warm countenance. That means, even the guy you really don't want to. Even the guy who you really would rather not be talking to him. She'en adam yachol la'asig she'yu bnei ha'olam chafetzim bo, im lo yavor midotav. A person cannot be popular. You will not have friends. You will not find people liking you and wanting to connect with you unless you're willing to forgo what's rightfully yours. We're not talking about what's rightfully yours in monetary matters. We're talking about in a relationship. So one guy's going to be a nudnik and call you incessantly, and another guy's going to come knocking at your door at 11:30 at night, and a third guy's going to be interrupting when you're in the middle of talking to someone. Yes, people badger, people do things that are uncomfortable, but you know what? You can't get along with people unless you're willing to forgo what you could technically claim, rightfully claim. Part of interpersonal relationships is the willingness to forgo. If a person is going to stand there and say, I don't deserve this, this isn't fair, he will not have good interpersonal relations. The key to having good interpersonal relations is that I'm willing to forgo what I can rightfully demand. So, yeah, you come... we had a delivery 2 days ago. And the delivery person shows up and he says he's got to go. And I see that he's delivering soragim. How do you say that in English? The bars that protect that kids won't fall out the window. What's that called?
Bars that protect people from falling out the window.
Okay, so this guy's delivering them, and I see that the top one is bent out of shape. So I tell him, look, I really can't sign on this until I call the company I ordered it from, to make sure that they're aware that one of the set of bars that they sent is bent out of shape, is damaged. So he says, great, okay. So he says, well, I gotta go. I said, I'm sorry to keep you, but I can't sign unless I talk to them. So I run upstairs and I call the company, and as I'm trying to get through to the company, I hear him saying, hey, fellow, I gotta go. Hey, mister, if you don't come down here and sign, I'm leaving with your grades. And I finally get through, and as I get through to the head of the company, I see him pulling out, driving away with the grates. So I tell the head of the company, I said, look, you know, I ordered these grates from you, and the guy just came, and I saw the top one was damaged, and I just wanted your approval if I should sign or not, but now he drove away with the grates. So he said to me, well, sign and make a note that it's damaged, and I'm going to call the delivery company right now to ensure he brings it back. So they call the delivery company, and the deliverer starts lying. He says, I waited there over 15 minutes for the guy. And I said, so they put me on the line. I said, that's a lie. You weren't here even 5 minutes before you pulled away. All it was, I came down, I saw it damaged right away. I said, I'm going to go call them. I didn't even get through on the phone. You weren't even here 5 minutes. And then I kicked myself. I said to myself, you know what? I'm in the right. He's wrong. And he's lying. But this whole conversation would have taken place differently had I gone down and greeted him and said, hey, buddy, you're coming in the heat. Can I get you a glass of water? Meaning I dealt with him vis-a-vis my needs and my concerns. Legitimate. I'm entitled to do that. But how would it have played out if I would have told him, why don't you come up, step out of the heat, get a drink while I call the company? One step towards him, and the whole story would have been resolved. Instead, he's standing out there in the heat, and I'm running inside because I'm panicked. I figure he might have damaged it, and in fact, it turns out he did damage it. And he's trying to get me to sign, and he's pressuring me to sign because he's trying to run away from his responsibility. But the truth is, again, that's what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying here. It's not a question of who's in the right. I treated him correctly. I didn't do anything wrong to him. All I said was, I'm calling the company to validate. Okay? I'm legitimate. But I could have taken a step towards him. And as I'm standing on the phone, I'm kicking myself. Now I have to fight with him. Now he's going to say, he did. Started lying and everything. And then he wanted to charge the company for his wait time. Okay? Rabbeinu Yonah says, you want interpersonal relationships. You got to forgo what you can rightfully demand and take a step towards the other party. So that doesn't mean forgoing and taking damaged goods, but it does mean finding a way to go towards the other person. V'im lo yavor chefzo mipnei chefzam mipatel retzono mipnei retzon acherim uvaze yiyu lo ohavim rabim yishmo nafsho min zakain shel bnei adam. And if a person can go this route, either forgo what he wants in favor of what they want, or annul his desires for their desires. If he goes that route, he'll have friends. If he doesn't do that, so then he won't have friends. And if he does do that, not only will he have friends, but he will protect himself from being harmed. Because if a person shows other people he's angry, he's going to show them, yisneu, so people will hate him. Vivakshu la'ra lo, and they will look how to harm him. People don't like it when someone's upset at them, even if he's in the right. I hired a teenager, and the kid agreed to show up at 10. So 10 o'clock comes, and he's not there. And I changed my whole schedule to work with him. 11 o'clock comes, and he's not there. 11:45, he calls and says, I'll be there at 12. 12:30, he's still not there. Comes 1:15 and he shows up. And I'm seething because I changed my whole day. I had meetings in the morning and I pushed them all off because we agreed we'd meet at 10. And he's showing up at 1:30. And I didn't say a word. And the whole time I was telling myself, this is not right, but he's a teenager. And he doesn't even understand. And I kept remembering how when I was a teenager, I made up to meet someone, I don't remember, we'll say at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I showed up at 5. And the person gave me over the head and said, you know, we made up at 4. And right now I won't have time to talk to you. And why'd you show up at 5? You can't do that to people. So they weren't too rough with me. They just gave me over the head. And I kept telling myself, you see, but you remember it. It hurt you so much that years later you still remember it. And I said to myself, maybe that's what he needs. Maybe someone has to give him over the head. But maybe it doesn't have to be me. Maybe he needs it. Maybe someone else will do it. But maybe it doesn't have to be me. Who said maybe someone else already did it? I don't know. So you want interpersonal relationships. You're going to have to forgo what's rightfully yours. Yeah, the kid's wrong. So don't hire him again. Yeah, obviously it's worth it for you to hire him. Ah, so he needs to be taught a lesson? Are you his parent? Who said you're the one to teach him the lesson? This is a tough call. Sometimes people do have to be taught. Sometimes there are consequences. You agree with a guy at 10, he doesn't show up. Okay, I had a similar story before Pesach. I hired someone and I told him, I'm here for exactly a half hour and then I have to leave. If you can make it in that half hour, I'll give you the instructions. You have 5 hours worth of work. You'll make a nice amount of money. But I can't stay after that half hour. And the guy calls me up when I'm already en route. I already left the place after waiting for him that half hour and says, I'm on my way. I said, you might as well get off the bus. I'm not here anymore. I can't. I told you I have to leave. Now, so there's a consequence. I felt bad for the guy. You know, he did get on a bus, but I did tell him in advance I wouldn't be able to be there beyond that half hour. So I'm not saying a person has to forgo what you don't have to ruin your day like I did with that teenager, but sometimes it's a consequence. You have no choice. But where you can forgo, so you have to know that that's how you make friends. Person says, why do I always have to be the one to forgo? What choice do you have? You want friends, you have to be willing to do that. The last week we moved apartments 10 days ago, 11 days ago, and a lot of things went wrong. The front door wouldn't close, the fridge broke, the gas started leaking, the internet didn't work, the phone didn't work. A lot of things broke down. And what happens when things break down is you have to call professionals. I don't think a single professional showed up the time they said they'd show up. So that's a lot of time. You end up losing whole days on this. And that's how I ended up learning how to fix everything. Meaning, I when we got married, I didn't know how to fix a door. I didn't know how to fix a sink. I didn't know how to fix a lock. We had to build closets. I never built a closet before in my life. But after three professionals agreed to show and didn't show, or showed and said, nah, I'm not doing this, it ended up being more worthwhile to do it myself than hire someone else to run after someone else and then wait another day. So what happens when the plumber you hired shows up 6 hours late and ruined your day? He told you he'll be there at 10. You didn't go out to work because you figured he'll be there at 10. You leave for work at 10:30. He ended up showing up at 4. I had this once. A neighbor 2 houses down from me was a plumber, and we had a serious leak. And I call him up in the morning and he says, I'll be there at 9. Comes 9:30, he's not there. I call him up, he says, I'll be there at 10. So again, you don't leave, you don't go to work, because he said, I'll be there in a half hour. Comes 10:30, I call him up, he says, you know, it's really a busy day, I'll be there at 11:30. And the whole day went like that, he didn't even show. And the guy lived 2 houses down from me, never showed up. Now what happens when the guy shows up late? If you're nice to him, you could end up learning and you'll never need to hire him again. Meaning, what I did was every time these people would show up and they'd show up late, I'd stand there and watch exactly what they did and ask them all the questions, and then I didn't have to hire them a second time. You know, so Erev Pesach, Bdikas Chametz, I come home to check Chametz, I'm about to make the bracha, and a pipe in the sink burst. And now there's water flying all over the house, and you're talking about 8 o'clock at night. So I have to shut the main valve, pipe burst. Now what you going to do? I learned how to fix it. Because by the time the plumber got there, it wouldn't pay. It was going to be Pesach already. So, kol hakavod, mazal tov. Bסדר גמור. תאמר להם שגם אני אמרתי מזל טוב. בסדר? להתראות. And you end up winning on two fronts. You made a friend. You'd gain nothing by yelling at the guy. You got absolutely nothing except for letting out steam. If you're nice to him, you could end up with a friend and with the knowledge that you won't even have to hire him in future if the same thing happens a second time. So this is a good advice for life, and people usually do not work this way. The guy shows up 3 hours late, you give him a piece of your mind. And what do you gain from it? Nothing. You got him upset. You're upset. You're not friends. You got nothing out of it. I have a friend who would always show up late. He was He would fix things, he'd show up 2 or 3 days late. You call him up and you say, I don't have hot water. And he says, I'll be there today, this afternoon. And he doesn't show up that day, and he doesn't show up the next day, and he doesn't show up the following day. He's sweet as anything, but he doesn't show up to do the job. So what choices do you have? Your choice is not to work with him, and your choice is still to be friendly to him. He's wrong, but you're not going to change him. What can you do? And in life, I found this to really be beneficial. I was once asked to come give a lecture in a certain yeshiva. I'm in the middle of giving a lecture, and an old man walks in and says, that's not how you teach this. So I'm silent. The guy has a long white beard. What am I supposed to say? So I said, I'm happy that Kvodo, your honor, came in. I'm happy to listen and show me how to teach the subject. And I sat quiet and I let him give the class for the next 5 minutes. This happened to me a few times when I was teaching elementary school and I was teaching in higher education. A few times I had like old people who thought it was their job to come and tell me I don't know how to teach it in front of the whole class. Okay. You're laughing. Imagine it was the first time I'm teaching 8th grade. It's my first year teaching. It's my first year with an official position. A man who has the greatest seniority in the school walks in the first week when I'm in the middle of teaching and says, young man, you don't know what you're doing here. This isn't how you teach the subject. Now, he was upset because he felt the kids in my class were too noisy and they were bothering the kids in his class. But instead of coming and telling me that, he walks in and says, you don't know how to teach. And I'm sitting there in front of the students, this is my first year teaching. And he's wrong, for sure he's dead wrong. But what would I win by fighting him? I can't win. The man has the greatest seniority in the place. He's been there longer than the principals, longer than everyone else. Now, if I'm going to start fighting with him, I'm not going to win the fight.
And he's a Talmud Chacham, and he's not...
No, he's not a Talmud Chacham. Okay. He's a teacher.
I was going to say, he's not supposed to act like that.
Yeah, he's for sure not supposed to act like that. So what do you do? I said, look, I'm very sorry. I'll be very happy for you to tell me what I'm doing wrong. I'm listening. You know, if I'm going to do what's right, then I can tell him, excuse me, if you have comments, you could tell me after class. I'll be very happy to talk to you then. It is completely improper for you to walk in here and tell me this now. I could tell him that, but did I win or lose? Either he'll answer me, or if I won, he'll hate me. So I bow out, I put my head down. Okay, you know what? By the end of the year, he had no friends in the staff. No one liked him. I was his friend. I happen to think the guy has a serious problem. I don't think he should be in education, but that doesn't matter. Till today, we're friends. So that's what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying. You want to make friends, you're going to have to be willing to accept things that are wrong. There's no two ways about it. He's wrong. You don't walk into a class and tell a teacher in front of the students he doesn't know what he's doing. He's wrong. But that doesn't mean you have to fight that point. So I'm not saying you should always forgo things. Sometimes a person can't forgo what's going on. Sometimes a person has to stand his ground and fight for himself. But in general, as an approach, Rabbeinu Yonah says that's what Shammai came to teach us. Havim kabel kol adam b'sever panim yafot means greet a person warmly, even though you don't feel like it. Even though the guy's annoying and you don't want to, and he doesn't deserve it, but that's how you're going to gain friends and be a likable guy. Being a likable guy is about being willing to forgo what's being wronged you. I could give you many more stories, but I think the point is understood.